In June 1979, Joe Fendley received the strangest request of his life. Fendley was the head of the Elberton Granite Finishing Company, a small stone-cutting and landscaping outfit in rural northwest Georgia's Elbert County. Not a lot worthy of Tor's Cabinet of Curiosities happened in his day-to-day life, which mostly consisted of making countertops and gravestones for people in his small town. But that all changed when a man calling himself R.C. Christian showed up at Elberton Granite, seeking to hire the company to build something truly bizarre. Christian reportedly had white hair and an accent that Fendley thought came from the upper Midwest, but nothing else was known about him, and he admitted to Fendley that R.C. Christian wasn't his real name. Christian showed Fendley a scale model of a Stonehenge-like structure, with four tall slabs of granite arranged around a central slab, balancing a sixth slab horizontally on top. This, Christian said, was what he wanted Elberton Granite to build for him. But that wasn't all. Christian also delivered a 10-page document detailing how the monument should align with the North Star, the 18.6-year lunar declination cycle, and the sun's rays at noon throughout the year, as well as messages to carve on the slabs. This is where things get truly weird. There was to be text identifying the monument as the Georgia Guidestones, naming its creators as R.C. Christian, once again noted to be a pseudonym, as well as, quote, a small group of Americans who seek the Age of Reason. The instructions repeatedly emphasized that the structure had to be capable of, quote, withstanding catastrophic events. One of the slabs was to have information about a time capsule, left jarringly incomplete. Time capsule to be placed 6 feet below this spot on blank, to be opened on blank. Whether a time capsule really was placed beneath the structure, and if so, what was in it, is unknown. But the majority of the monument was given over to what appeared to be 10 proclamations engraved in 8 common world languages across the slabs, reminiscent of, depending on who you ask, the 10 Commandments, the Bill of Rights, the UN Declaration of Human Rights, the labels on Dr. Bronner's soap bottles, or perhaps, according to some conspiracy theorists, the 10 Commandments of the Antichrist. They appeared in English, Spanish, Swahili, Hebrew, Hindi, Arabic, Mandarin, and Russian. On the top slab, abridged versions appeared in 4 ancient languages: Babylonian cuneiform, Egyptian hieroglyphs, ancient Greek, and Sanskrit. In full, the English version of the proclamations reads, 1. Maintain humanity under 500 million in perpetual balance with nature. 2. Guide reproduction wisely, improving fitness and diversity. 3. Unite humanity with a living new language. 4. Rule passion, faith, tradition, and all things with tempered reason. 5. Protect people and nations with fair laws and just courts. 6. Let all nations rule internally, resolving external disputes in a world court. 7. Avoid petty laws and useless officials. 8. Balance personal rights with social duties. 10. Prize truth, beauty, love, seeking harmony with the infinite. And 10. Be not a cancer on the earth. Leave room for nature. Understandably, Joe Fendley was a little bit weirded out by all this, especially that unsettling first proclamation, which we'll get around to later. Was he being contracted to decorate a cult compound? A Bond villain's estate? In an attempt to shoo Christian off, Fendley gave him a quote several times higher than what it would really have cost to build this monument. To his great surprise, Christian accepted it without even trying to negotiate. Later that year, as Fendley brought in specialist stonecutters to complete the strange but lucrative project, Christian bought a 5-acre farmstead from local farmer Wayne Mullinex to serve as a permanent home for the Guidestones. To thank Mullinex for providing land, Christian allowed Mullinex and his descendants the exclusive right to graze their cattle on the site of the Guidestones. The Georgia Guidestones were erected on March 22, 1980, and remained there until 2022, on a hilltop outside of Elberton, Georgia, right off State Highway 77. R.C. Christian has not surfaced since the day the Guidestones were unveiled, nor has much further information come out as to who he actually was, who financed the expensive project, and why, but who boy does the rabbit hole go awfully deep. What do the messages on the guidestones mean? Could they really be the Ten Commandments of the Antichrist? I'm your host, Tor Parsons, this is my co-host, Jollibee the Durian, and welcome to Tor's Cabinet of Curiosities. I'm surprised I hadn't heard of the Georgia Guidestones until relatively recently. And that's not just because I'm me and I'm into this kind of stuff. I'm surprised they're not as widespread and well-known a conspiracy theory as chemtrails, Bohemian Grove, and jet fuel's capacity to melt steel beams. The mystery surrounding the Georgia Guidestones contains every trope of the New World Order conspiracy theory. Here we have a monument with esoteric astronomical features, planned by an unknown cabal of people who seem to have plenty of money, bearing shadowy instructions that could be read as a plan for world domination and seem to call for eugenics, world government, and the culling of billions of people, holding a worshipful reverence for science, reason, nature, and diversity, all things that New World Order people tend to think are bad, or at least might be code words for something worse. And it may even have had ties to the real-life Rosicrucians, which we'll get into later. And it was real! I don't think there's any other real-life site on Earth that seems to have come so thoroughly out of the pages of a Dan Brown thriller. But it's not that conspiracy theories have ignored the Georgia Guidestones. Far from it. I just think they don't talk about it enough, given that it's perhaps the only place in existence that suggests there might be something to their paranoia. Still, though, they do crop up from time to time in discussions of the Illuminati, New World Order, etc. For example, Alex Jones included the Guidestones as a central part of his 2007 film Endgame, Blueprint for Global Enslavement. And since I've mentioned Alex Jones, I gotta do it.
I don't like them putting chemicals in the water that turn the friggin' frogs gay. Do you understand that? Turn the friggin' frogs gay. Serious crap.
Alex Jones's Endgame pseudo-documentary asserts that there's a eugenics-driven global conspiracy to kill off the majority of the world's population, supported by the US government, Bill Gates, and, apparently, the band U2. I always knew they were suspicious. Jones speculates that the Georgia Guidestones are an instruction manual for these dastardly schemers, which doesn't make a lot of sense if I were putting together a secret plan to destroy most of humanity. The one thing that I definitely wouldn't do is engrave the details of my plan onto a very conspicuous, publicly accessible monument in an area where they could be noticed by plenty of Alex Jones-watching rednecks. But regardless of what visionary who anticipated the circa 2020 trend of frogs being associated with gay culture may think, it's hard not to see the first two commandments of the Georgia Guidestones as a call for ethnic cleansing and eugenics. As a refresher, they are: maintain humanity under 500 million in perpetual balance with nature, and guide reproduction wisely, improving fitness and diversity. Unlike many of the other precepts of the Guidestones, maintaining the human population under 500 million sure isn't something you often see reasonable people advocating. We surpassed that number around 1650 AD. Even when the Guidestones were created in 1979, there were already 4.3 billion people on the planet, and getting the population down to the recommended number on the Guidestones would have meant getting rid of 88% of the world's population. Today, closer to 94%. It's hard to imagine anyone thinks this would be a good thing for humanity, even the 6% that were allowed to live. Nor was this likely to have been a mistake. It's not entirely out of the question that the contracted sculptors of the Guidestones could have left off a zero. After all, they did misspell the word pseudonym in the carving identifying the creator of the Guidestones as, quote, R.C. Christian, a pseudonym. So they could have made other mistakes. And if it was intended to read as 5 billion rather than 500 million people, that might have sounded reasonable. There weren't 5 billion people yet in 1979. But the number is carefully delineated with commas every 3 digits, and the precision with which some of the Guidestones' astronomical features were calculated suggests that, at least in terms of that kind of stuff, the carving of the Guidestones was a pretty precise, detail-oriented project. They wouldn't have made that kind of mistake. How did the creators of the Guidestones expect that the population was supposed to get down to that number? The second directive, urging people to guide reproduction wisely, may offer a clue. Maybe they did have some kind of eugenics program in mind, where most people would be restricted from having children for a period of time, with only the most fit and diverse, however you define that, allowed to reproduce. This isn't too far off from programs some real countries considered to curb population growth in the 70s, when taking serious measures to curb apocalyptic population growth was the latest craze. Remember when I talked about Paul Ehrlich? For example, just a few years before the Guidestones were built, from 1975 to 77, 8 million people were forcibly sterilized in India, mostly beggars and ethnic minorities, on the orders of the Prime Minister Indira Gandhi, ruling as a dictator under emergency powers. But those who have studied the Georgia Guidestones, from an objective, non-conspiracy theorist perspective, say that this probably wasn't what the creators of the Guidestones, whoever they were, had in mind. Even as obsessed as we are with climate change at the current moment in history, the 1970s and 80s were probably the golden years of the apocalypse in popular culture. The threat of nuclear war was part of the zeitgeist. Up to half of Americans in public polls said they expected to die in a war with the Soviets, which should put our current spot of trouble with the Russians into historical context. Movies like The Day After, Red Dawn, and War Games instilled a fear of impending war in the American public, and dozens of other fictional properties included nuclear war just as a world-building element. It was seen as such an inevitability that Star Trek, the iconic optimistic projection of the future, expected there to be apocalyptic nuclear wars in the 1990s and the 21st century. It was such an omnipresent threat, it was referenced in sunny pop songs. You do not want to look up what I Melt With You is actually about. And we did get pretty damn close! In light of this, it's not hard to see where someone could have gotten the idea to create a sort of permanent instruction manual for setting up a functional society in the ashes of an atomic war, which most people believe was the true intended purpose of the Georgia Guidestones. And there's plenty of evidence pointing this way. R.C. Christian wanted Joe Fendley to make sure the Guidestones were capable of withstanding catastrophic events, his words. The rules on the stones certainly sound like instructions for building a society from the ground up, and they're written in several common world languages because maybe its creators weren't sure who would survive a nuclear war and find the Guidestones. And note that the first rule says to maintain humanity under 500 million, not to bring it down to that number. The implication seems to be that when the Guidestones were meant to be viewed, it was expected that there already would be less than 500 million people. In light of that, the Guidestones take on a new meaning. Whether or not there was a real time capsule buried in the stone's foundation, the stones themselves were a sort of time capsule. A message of peace, goodwill, and civilization through time from the 20th century to a post-apocalyptic future. So, who would do this? And more importantly, who would have the means to do this? The answer to the first question is probably more people than you think, and the second one doesn't really narrow things down, but we have some clues. Until 2021, there was at least one person left on Earth who knew exactly who built the Georgia Guidestones. Wyatt C. Martin, the head of the Granite City Bank in Elberton. He handled the transfer of an undisclosed but substantial sum of money from R.C. Christian to Elberton Granite, which required him to verify the identity of the money's source. Martin vowed to keep the true identity of R.C. Christian and his financiers secret, going as far as burning all the paperwork related to the funding of the Guidestones and dumping the ashes in a lake. He told many reporters over the years, quote, "They could put a gun to my head and kill me. I will never reveal the real name, but the way that it's worded does suggest a few things about the creators of the Guidestones. First, there seems to be a group of multiple people responsible." He says, "They could put a gun to my head." I don't think this old Southerner would use "they" to conceal someone's gender. Like, I'm pretty sure it's a multiple people "they" rather than a singular person "they." But also that R.C. Christian seems to have had an important role in this after all. When I first began researching this, I don't know why I thought this, but I came to think of R.C. Christian as a sort of a middleman between the people of Elbert County and the small group of Americans seeking the Age of Reason. I don't know why I thought that, but something about people's descriptions of him made me think that he had to be some kind of envoy sent by the real creators of the Guidestones, who himself didn't have much of a role other than being the public face of the small group. But I don't think this is actually true. I think he was the main man behind it. Wyatt Martin passed away in December 2021 at a respectable 91 years old, likely taking the secrets of the Georgia Guidestones with him to the grave. But some say there are clues in R.C. Christian's pseudonym itself. People have noted that the name R.C. Christian resembles codenames used by the Rosicrucians, a group founded in 1600s Germany, variously described as a secret society or a loosely affiliated philosophical movement. Before you say, "Oh God, we're getting deeper into conspiracy theory land now, aren't we?" Let me give you this. The Rosicrucians definitely exist, unlike groups they're often mentioned alongside, like the Illuminati. You can visit the Rosicrucians website, where they describe themselves as a community of philosophers who study and practice the natural laws governing the universe. You can read their magazine, the Rosicrucian Digest, watch their official YouTube channel, Rosicrucian TV, or even visit their headquarters, which since 1927 has been in, of all places, San Jose, California. And there's strong circumstantial evidence linking R.C. Christian and the Guidestones to the Rosicrucians. The group was founded by a semi-mythical individual known as Christian Rosenkreuz, who wrote that, quote, "The letters R.C. should be their seal, mark, and character." Among early Rosicrucians, he was sometimes referred to as Christian R.C. One of the most famous Rosicrucians was the philosopher Thomas Paine, whose most read essay is called The Age of Reason, exactly the thing the creators of the Georgia Guidestones said they were seeking. If you look at the Guidestones from above, they're said to resemble the Rosy Cross symbol of the Rosicrucians. But the strongest evidence probably comes from what the Rosicrucians believe. The Rosicrucians preach a combination of New Age spirituality and scientific rationalism, a lot like the messages engraved on the Guidestones. Rosicrucian publications in the 1600s, encouraging the creation and spread of knowledge through networks of enlightened individuals, are credited with inspiring some of the greatest scientists of the time, like Johannes Kepler and Tycho Brahe, to meet and discuss their works, sparking exchanges of ideas that revolutionized how science is done. But at the same time, Rosicrucian thought included wacky, esoteric religious mysticism, drawing on all manner of obscure medieval European religious movements. The Georgia Guidestones' combination of internationalist liberal humanism with New Agey concepts, like, for example, suggesting a world court to resolve international disputes, but also saying things like seeking harmony with the infinite, is very Rosicrucian. The whole speculated concept of the Georgia Guidestones as a message to future generations from an elite few people seeking an age of reason itself is a lot like the central idea of Rosicrucianism, which holds that there are fundamental truths about the universe kept as secrets by an enlightened few, waiting to be revealed when the intellectual climate is right. But I've only told half the story about the Rosicrucians here. The Rosicrucians have existed since the Renaissance as a movement. Of that we can be sure. They also exist today as a pseudo-secret society, a bit like the Freemasons, the aforementioned group headquartered in San Jose, who are officially known as the Ancient and Mystical Order Rosicrucis, or AMORC. But whether Christian Rosicrucis and the Renaissance-era Rosicrucian secret society really existed is a matter of debate, and most historians say they didn't. Rather, early Rosicrucianism was the most meta of secret societies. The first actual Rosicrucian societies were built around belief in the existence of the original Rosicrucian secret society. Rosicrucianism probably started in anonymously written pamphlets spread around early 17th century Europe, alleging the existence of a long-standing secret cabal encouraging free thought, scientific research, and self-discovery, which held forbidden knowledge that it was gradually revealing to the world for the betterment of humanity. These texts may have been picked up and spread by the Catholic Church as a form of disinformation, painting the Church's secularist and humanist enemies as being involved in a conspiracy. Of course it backfired, and intellectuals across the continent said that whether or not this thing really exists, it should. There was never any one central Rosicrucian society, and today, dozens of organizations claim to be the descendants of the quote-unquote original Rosicrucians. Some more sciency, some more new agey. The AMORC in San Jose, sometimes considered the main Rosicrucian group, is just the most successful. So, is it possible the AMORC is behind the Georgia Guidestones? Maybe, but I doubt it. They probably have enough money to have embarked on a project like this, at least, but building a monument as a guide for post-apocalyptic people to reconstruct their society doesn't seem like it would be their speed. The AMORC considers itself apolitical and does not teach its members any guidelines on how to live their life. They say they're devoted to studying the mysteries of the universe rather than promoting any values. Their leaders have expressed support for things like world government and preservation of nature, which dovetail well with the Guidestones' messages, but I don't think they're the type of people who would try to impose their values on anyone, even hypothetical survivors of a nuclear apocalypse. I think the connections between the Guidestones and Rosicrucians are compelling, but it's more plausible that the person or people who designed the Guidestones were influenced by Rosicrucian thought rather than being supported by any existing organized Rosicrucian order. So who could that have been? There's one compelling theory that keeps on coming up. What you are hearing is the CNN Apocalypse broadcast. In 1980, when CNN was launched, it was the first 24-hour news channel, and the concept of a channel that just played the news constantly without ever signing off was seen as unusual and unnecessary. In the days before the network's launch on June 1st, 1980, a journalist asked CNN's founder Ted Turner if he really intended to broadcast the news 24/7. He responded, "Barring satellite problems, we won't be signing off until the world ends. We'll be on, and we will cover it live, and that will be our last event. We'll play the national anthem only one time on the 1st of June, and when the end of the world comes, we'll play Nearer My God to Thee before we sign off." The existence of a CNN doomsday tape incorporating a recording of the traditional hymn Nearer My God to Thee became an urban legend, referenced in movies and even parodied by NPR at one point.
This is special coverage of the end of the world from NPR News. I'm, well, who cares, I won't be for long. An asteroid is speeding toward the Earth and will soon destroy it. Of course, NPR News will have the best analysis of it all the day after the world ends.
But amazingly, the CNN Apocalypse broadcast was real, unexpectedly surfacing in 2015 on Jalopnik, a website for car geeks, of all things. It had apparently been discovered by a CNN intern in 2009 who went on to work for Jalopnik. In CNN's tape archive, it had been marked, "Hold for release until end of world confirmed." So if Ted Turner actually had CNN put together a video to play as the world ended, this guy must have been pretty serious about existential risk. Who was Ted Turner? Ted Turner, who I'll be referring to in the past tense here, even though he's still alive somewhere on some grand estate in Georgia, was the ultimate eccentric media magnate. I really wasn't expecting the founder of a news network as bland as CNN to be so unique. There's a bit of every weird billionaire in him, from Elon Musk to pre-White House Donald Trump, except his politics took a pretty different slant. Born to a family of advertising magnates in Cincinnati, Turner grew up in Georgia, where he built his media empire. He branched out from his dad's interest in billboards into TV, picking up failing stations across the South and folding him into his so-called superstation, WTCG, which mostly ran cheap sitcoms and cartoon reruns, became one of the nation's biggest stations in the field of cable TV because of Turner's shrewd business skills. By the end of the 70s, WTCG was synonymous with cable TV. Turner had bought the Atlanta Braves and Atlanta Hawks baseball and basketball teams, and began to be nicknamed the Mouth of the South. Over the next few years, he founded not just CNN, but Cartoon Network and World Championship Wrestling. But if you mention Ted Turner to a Georgian of a certain age, they won't necessarily remember him as the founder of CNN, or the owner of Atlanta's pro sports franchises, or the Mouth of the South. They might use another one of his many nicknames, Captain Outrageous. Because if Ted Turner's business successes are larger than life, his business failures are larger than life. Even some of his successful enterprises are super weird. For one thing, he attempted to launch a competitor to no less a global institution than the Olympics. In 1986, he started the Goodwill Games, which were a rip-off of the Olympics in every possible way. They began with a torch relay to the location of the Games, originating in Turner's hometown of Atlanta rather than in Greece. Each Games had a logo, very similar to the previous year's Olympic logo, and they were held every 4 years, with separate summer and winter games, often in places where the Olympics had just recently been held. Turner said the Goodwill Games were about depoliticizing the Olympics after the US's boycott of the 1980 Games in Russia, but others said that he was just butthurt that his media networks didn't get contracts to broadcast the actual Olympics. The Goodwill Games weren't a complete disaster. Attendance was lackluster, but the world's top athletes really did turn up. And at the 1986 Goodwill Games in Moscow and the 1990 Goodwill Games in Seattle, a few world records were set in a few different sports. They fell off after that, though, and the last games were in 2001, in Brisbane, Australia. Oh, and Ted Turner owns 51,000 American bison, about 10% of the world's total bison. He uses them to promote one of his most unique pet projects, a campaign to put more bison meat on Americans' plates. Now, he says that this is for the good of the species. If bison meat becomes a staple, more people will farm bison, and the more bison you farm, the more bison there will be to reintroduce to the American plains. Which, like, alright. But also, I feel like part of the point of having fuck you money is that you get to eat endangered animals. Other things that Ted Turner has done include the following. He challenged Rupert Murdoch to a fistfight. He promoted the work of anarcho-primitivist philosopher Daniel Quinn, despite being a media billionaire. He bought the rights to thousands of classic black and white movies, like Casablanca and Gone with the Wind, and colorized them, which was seen as such blasphemy that it led the Library of Congress to create the National Film Registry, preserving the original versions of classic movies. He dated four women at once, all of which were aware that they were competing for Ted Turner's affections, and he called the setup complicated, but better than being married. He also created this.
Go Planet!
By your powers combined, I am Captain Planet!
Captain Planet, he's our hero.
Long ago, the four nations lived together in harmony, but that all changed when Ted Turner attacked. I got that song stuck in my head while researching this episode, so you're gonna have to have it stuck in your head too, viewer. Ted Turner usually didn't have a role in creating the content that was shown on media outlets. He was a businessman, not a TV producer. The only show he ever created himself for any of his networks was Captain Planet, which should tell you something about where his priorities lay. In fact, I'm surprised Ted Turner secretly controls the world isn't as popular a conspiracy theory as, say, Bill Gates secretly controls the world, given the number of controversial and conspiracy-ready things Turner is a supporter of. His biggest such cause, and we're getting into Guidestone territory here, is population control. He has devoted $125 million of his own money, plus another $6 million each year, to finding ways to humanely reduce Earth's population. He says reducing the Earth's population by 95% would be ideal, which would get us pretty close to the Guidestone's recommended population of 500 million, and he has praised China's now-abandoned one-child policy. He has a known interest in the apocalypse, as his CNN Apocalypse broadcast showed, and one of the largest philanthropic projects he's supported is the Nuclear Threat Initiative, a group campaigning for a ban on nuclear weapons. Are you beginning to understand why people think Turner created the Georgia Guidestones? There is no direct evidence linking Turner to the Guidestones, and if he was involved, he didn't act alone. If he was funding it, then my theory about R.C. Christian being just a middleman must have been correct. Ted Turner was definitely not R.C. Christian. By the time R.C. Christian showed up in Elberton, Ted Turner was enough of a household name in Georgia that someone would have recognized him. But the circumstantial evidence is pretty strong. But why Elberton, Georgia, particularly? Why that of all places? If Ted Turner is behind the stones, why didn't he put it on one of his thousands of acres of bison ranches? Cynics will say that it's just because Elbert County is the nation's granite capital. Maybe Turner, or whoever created the Guidestones, thought it would be less conspicuous to get a granite finishing company to build a mysterious granite monument in an area with lots of competing granite finishing companies. Maybe they thought that in a place where a lot of the economy revolves around quarrying and carving granite, a project like the Georgia Guidestones wouldn't stick out as much. The History Channel show Brad Meltzer's Decoded, which is just one step above Endgame Blueprint for Global Enslavement, posits that Elbert County was chosen based on a theory by the early 20th century New Age mystic Edgar Cayce, who also, surprisingly, created the card game Pit. Cayce speculated that the world would soon enter a phase of earthquakes, floods, volcanic eruptions, and other natural disasters that would reshape the map of North America. The Deep South would be one of the only safe places. What the History Channel leaves out is that Cayce expected this would happen in the 1930s, and that only Florida, Texas, New England, and the West Coast would be seriously affected. Even if you buy that the creator of the Guidestones was into weird, wooey, New Age pseudoscience, which I don't doubt, Edgar Cayce's writings don't explain why the stones are in northwest Georgia. When the Guidestones were under construction, R.C. Christian was asked this. Why Elbert County? What made you put them here? He responded that he had family in the area, several generations back. Everyone who met R.C. Christian says he didn't have a southern accent, and may have been from the Midwest. Hudson Cohn, the curator of the Elberton Granite Museum, which has an exhibit on the mystery of the Guidestones, specifically suggested the Dakotas, so his family must have lived outside Georgia for quite a while. But this is still a data point worth following up on. Maybe the small group of Americans seeking the Age of Reason can be uncovered by looking into Elbert County's genealogical records, or, you know, searching for ancestors of rich and powerful Americans who may have come from there. It's also worth noting that Cohn, who may be the last person currently left alive who has met R.C. Christian and was present from the beginning as the Guidestones were being commissioned and built, doesn't believe Ted Turner was involved in the creation of the Guidestones at all. Do I believe Ted Turner created the Guidestones? I guess he's the most plausible culprit, I'll say that. But I'll defer to people who know more about the Georgia Guidestones than me on this, and Hudson Cohn is definitely one of those people. Is it possible that the stones really were built by the Rosicrucians, either the AMORC or one of the other smaller organizations claiming the legacy of Christian Rosenkreuz? It is. I won't reject that out of hand. Or, as some locals in northwest Georgia have speculated, maybe we're all being duped. Maybe R.C. Christian never existed at all, and there's a Murder on the Orient Express sort of solution here. Everyone is responsible. Joe Fendley, Wyatt Martin, Hudson Cohn, All those people seemed to be very eager to discuss the Guidestones in the press, while also insisting that they weren't allowed to say anything about the stone's fascinating mystery. And think, we sure wouldn't be talking about Elbert County, Georgia, if it weren't the site of the mysterious and controversial Georgia Guidestones. Maybe it was all just a ploy to get Elberton, Georgia and its granite industry into the headlines. I learned a lot about granite quarrying while researching this episode, and now, when I was working on it, I wanted to go to Elbert County to see the Guidestones before they were destroyed in 2022. Maybe I had fallen for Big Granite and Big Georgia tourism's bait, hook, line, and sinker. Now that's a Georgia Guidestones conspiracy theory I can get behind. But does it matter who built the Georgia Guidestones? Whether they're some janky billionaire's pet project, or rural America's shrewdest publicity stunt, or the work of an honest-to-goodness secret society, the stone's message is worth taking to heart. Unsettling as some of the writings on the stones may have been, they ultimately amount to being a reasoned call for a better society. We could all do well to protect people and nations with fair laws and just courts, and to rule all things with tempered reason. And as the recent events in Ukraine have shown, had the Georgia Guidestones survived 2022, they may have been useful for their original intended purpose. This episode has had a life of its own. I originally wrote it years ago when I was working on the old Tours Cabinet of Curiosities podcast on the radio. The live broadcast was postponed 7 successive times, each one for a different and unrelated reason, amounting to a total of a month-long delay, till I finally pulled the plug on it, convinced the episode had to be cursed. Around postponement 4 or 5, Russia invaded Ukraine, and suddenly the world became terrified of nuclear war, a threat I'd dismissed in my original draft of this script. Then, a few postponements further on, it was clear the Russian invasion was a failure, and my next draft was a lot less downcast. But the real curse of this episode struck after the original version was broadcast. Just a few months after I finally got this episode onto the air, and I thought I was finally done with the Georgia Guidestones, this happened.
At noon, an investigation at the mysterious Georgia Guidestones. Here's a live exclusive Sky 4 look from the site. People who live nearby say they heard a boom this morning. Right now, our Rashad Williams is joining us live from Elbert County, Georgia, with what we know so far. Rashad.
Since summer 2022, the Georgia Guidestones are no more.
The GBI just releasing this video hours ago, and you can see there is a bright flash and then part of the structure explodes. This next video shows what the GBI has identified now as a car leaving the area shortly after that explosion.
Security camera footage shows an explosion going off near the monument and a gray sedan quickly driving away. Only one of the slabs was destroyed, but the rest of the structure was torn down for safety reasons soon after. The state of Georgia is investigating the attack, but as of summer 2024, when I was recording this episode, there are no known suspects. I may have to update this episode yet again before long, because this is a developing story. By the time this is out to the public, some other Guidestones-related shit is gonna go down, I just know it. By now, I've learned not to mess with the Georgia Guidestones. I may have dismissed all the satanic speculation earlier in this episode, but I'm pretty sure investigating the Guidestones has put some kind of curse on me. Like, right now, while I'm recording this, my camera keeps crapping out. Every, 5 minutes, my camera just stops recording, and I've never had this problem before. I have no idea what's going on. I'm honestly not surprised the stones got blown up, though. In fact, I'm surprised they stuck around for as long as they did. If you asked me to estimate the life expectancy of a publicly accessible monument built by a mysterious rich benefactor in rural Georgia devoted to a list of everything rural Georgia residents hate, 42 years without a serious attempt to destroy it would have been pretty far out of my expected range. I don't think who blew up the Guidestones is much of a fascinating whodunit. Some random chud is gonna be arrested at some point. The most intriguing mystery is gonna be whether his name is Chad Sawyer or Brent. But because this episode is just that cursed, another big twist in the story of the Guidestones was revealed that same week, and it was mostly overshadowed in the media by the stone's destruction. A new potential suspect for building the Guidestones was discovered. He was not Ted Turner, and he was revealed by none other than John Oliver. A week before the Guidestones were blown up, John Oliver released a spot in which he made fun of Candace Taylor, a fringe candidate for the high-profile Georgia governor's race. Taylor's campaign platform included destroying the Guidestones, calling them an instruction manual for satanic elites. A side note, after the Guidestones were destroyed, Taylor claimed it was done by lightning. I think we have a suspect. So naturally, John Oliver riffed about the mystery of the Guidestones for a little while, and then he brought up a cheap amateur documentary made in 2015 by a born-again Christian press, in which Wyatt Martin opened up a box of parcels and other correspondence with R.C. Christian on camera. And apparently, the address on them matches an Iowa surgeon named Herbert Kirsten. Kirsten died in 2005 at 85. Known photos of him show a white-haired man who matches physical descriptions of R.C. Christian, and being from Iowa, he probably matched the descriptions of Christian having a Midwest accent. The Dutch surname Kirsten means Christian. He was a surgeon, so he probably had plenty of money. Kirsten's obituary in the Des Moines Register says he was interested in environmental and population issues. I think at long last, we may have our guy. Except for one thing, Kirsten was a white supremacist. This is one of the best documented aspects of his little documented life. William Sales Doan, a historian in Kirsten's hometown of Fort Dodge, says Kirsten had plans for a project that would prove Europeans are the world's superior race. That doesn't square with the message of the Guidestones, which tell would-be apocalypse survivors to improve fitness and diversity. Sorry, Jollibee. Oops. And appear in 8 languages, leaving the possibility open that the people who build the society the Guidestones advocate for might not be Westerners. Further contradicting the Guidestones, Kirsten once wrote a letter to a Florida newspaper praising David Duke, saying he was one of the only people who stood up for American interests, quote, in this age of internationalism. This doesn't sound like a guy who would spend thousands of dollars, hundreds of thousands, possibly millions of dollars, on a monument advocating a world government. Kirsten's surviving children also say they doubt he was behind the Guidestones. So, the mystery of the Georgia Guidestones persists. Who made them? Who destroyed them? What were they for? What will happen now? We don't know any of those things for certain, even if we have some good theories. Until the next time this episode needs updating, remember, be not a cancer on the earth, rule all things with tempered reason, seek harmony with the infinite, and I'm beginning to think that if the devil really did go down to Georgia, the place he went was Elbert County.
Want to reach your friends, but they break the ties you